Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe. Well, welcome to today's Gold Star Classroom, being recorded live at Tolt's Place in Mentor, Ohio. I'm your host, Dr. Jerry Jaffe. Let me introduce today's students. On my right is educator Eddie Warner.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be here.
Hi, Eddie. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
And on my left is philosophy professor Aaron Pearl.
Hello, Jerry. Hello, studio audience.
Hello, Aaron. Thanks for being here.
Sure.
Sitting across from me is the caffeinated voice of reason, Steve Sabo.
And I'm very happy to be here, too. Looking forward to my second Golden Banana.
Yes. We have a past winner of the classroom prize with us today. I wish you all luck. I'm going to be asking you a variety of questions across the vast knowledge of human knowing and learning, and I will be grading your answers. So do your best to represent yourselves, and at the end of today's class, I will be handing out the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana.
Ooh.
Ooh is right, Karen. Some people may not know this about your host and professor, but at one time in my life, I was a high school driving instructor. And you are all drivers. You drive?
Yeah.
You drive, Aaron?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought we'd start off with some easy questions on the subject of how well do you know the traffic code in the state of Ohio?
Oh, no.
This is a pet peeve of mine, actually, because I feel like too many people do not know.
Okay.
So I hope I'm going to do good on this, because otherwise I'm a big hypocrite.
Well, Aaron, we're going to find out. All of the answers are based on the 2011 edition of the Digest of Ohio Motor Vehicle Laws. And the first question, when should your headlights be on?
Anytime your wipers are on.
Well, that's true. That, at night?
And at night, obviously.
Boop, boop, boop,
at
boop.
Night?
Yes.
In the rain?
Do we have to buzz in or raise our hands? Or
my buzzer is not
exactly?
functioning correctly,
yeah, what do we,
Professor.
Well, let me say...
What's the protocol here?
Before we go to Eddie, let me say that many of the things that have been said so far are correct. I have specifically four answers that are out of the digest.
Four answers.
Okay. One of them is whenever your windshield wipers are on.
Okay.
So that is correct.
Awesome.
Aaron, 5 points for you.
Yes.
One of them is at night. 5 points for Steve Sabo. Although they phrase it as between sunset and sunrise.
Ah.
Okay.
And there are two more.
Funeral procession.
Oh, is that on the list?
That is not on the list.
It should be. You need to
Is that a law, though? Is that a law? Or is that a custom?
I think it's a law because you go through lights and stuff like that, so you have to be part of the procession to go through the lights.
Right.
But I don't know... there may be a separate section in the digest about how to run a funeral procession.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it is the case that the digest version is for student learners. The actual Ohio code of driving laws is actually a lot longer and more complicated.
Gotcha.
Than the learner's digest.
What about fog?
And someone mentioned rain earlier.
Yeah,
one of the categories is rain, snow, or fog.
Yeah.
So that's another 5 points for Steve. There is one other expressly listed category for when you must have your headlights on. Eddie.
I want to regress a moment. Mm-hmm. I thought it was supposed to be a half hour before dusk and a half hour before dawn, to be completely accurate.
Well, to be completely accurate.
Still correct.
To be completely accurate. Eddie now loses 5 points for attempting to correct the teacher with erroneous information.
How would you judge that specifically? That seems a little bit too...
I think I remember that from driver's ed. I have a good memory.
It is the case that sometimes people argue about what is actually sort of legally sunset and sunrise.
Yeah.
Because as the year goes and days get longer and shorter, it's not a precise time.
Right.
Yours truly once got a ticket in a state park. Because I was walking back to my car at dusk, and there was a park ranger waiting in the parking lot handing out tickets to people for not leaving before sunset.
So how that sort of thing is judged is a little bit, you know, open for argumentation. But in the digest, it uses the words between sunset and sunrise. There's no reference to 30 minutes before or after.
Jerry, if you were flashing your lights on in the state park, I think that's a completely different offense.
Sadly, there was no flashing of any kind going on for this ticket.
Can you give us a clue, Professor?
In a snowstorm?
Well, rain, snow, and fog is one of the four answers. The other one is probably obvious when said, but not something you would think of.
Can you give us a clue, Professor? Help us out a little bit, please.
No.
Light, inclement weather.
Yes. Think legalistically. If you've listed those other three categories, what would be the other category a lawyer would want to have?
When you're in an accident or pulled over.
No, but thinking of accidents is a good lawyer
idea. When you're broken down.
Not having to do with breaking down.
When you're tailgating someone
visibility?
In a high-speed lane.
You're almost there, Steve. Whenever natural lighting conditions are such that you cannot see a clear 1,000 feet ahead of you.
Clear 1,000 feet in front of you.
Are we talking like feet? Mount St. Helens, volcanic ash eruption? Yeah. What
could
else
be.
Would that
could be anything.
Could be anything. Weird midday storms, eclipses.
Vampires.
Being in valleys where there's shadows.
Zombies.
Bonus round, how far is that in yards?
Don't even bring up the metric system.
Yeah, 1,000 feet would be 333 and a third.
Of course, one of the funny things about that, I mean, I guess if you're going to have a law, you're going to be specific, so they say 1,000 feet.
Yeah.
But when you're actually driving, you don't know what 1,000 feet is.
Yeah.
700 feet, 1,100 feet, you had to judge that. But that does bring me to my next driving instruction question. What does the guide suggest for a safe stopping distance? There's one correct answer, and there is a second answer that's common, but there's one correct answer.
One correct answer.
Was it stopping distance? Six car lengths?
It is not six car lengths. Eddie?
I know when approaching a stop sign, you're supposed to stop like 10 feet before the stop sign and then kind of coast up to it and then look around before proceeding. And I remember from the 1970s when I had driver's ed, the Shell answer man said the two-second rule for following people. So I'm going to say follow that two-second rule for safe stopping.
Okay, we have an answer on the table of two-second rule. Agree, disagree, or alternatives?
I'm going to say 50 feet just because I'm going to say it.
Okay, so we have like six car lengths, 50 feet, and 2 seconds. Three completely different ways of measuring.
I was thinking safe braking distance from another
that's
car.
That's what they're talking about, safe stopping distance. So like, between you and the car ahead of you.
Right, so not at a stop sign. We're talking at...
Well, that was Eddie babbling about.
That's what I was wondering. If
not that, things not completely
for
related.
The record, I resent the characterization of babbling. Thank you.
I thought it was about car lengths, though. I thought it was...
Even the guidebook says this, and sometimes people will say this, and I think they used to teach this like a generation ago. Mm. It used to be one car length for each 10 miles you're going.
For each 10 miles, that's right. That's what I was thinking, six, because you're going 60 to 70 miles an hour.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's right.
But they don't really
recommend... When are you going 60 or 70 miles an hour when you have to come to a stop?
Well,
this is safe stopping
on the highway.
So,
like, if this guy's tire blows out and spins out, you gotta.
But it turns out that advice is not good advice to give people.
No?
No. Because there's too much math involved. How long is your car? Is it your car or the other driver's car? If you're going 52 or 64, how much should it be? So, to do it correctly, it's a stupid piece of advice.
And better brakes versus, you know.
So what they tell people now is...
Wait, you're supposed to be able to see the bumper of the car in front of you.
I thought it was the bottom of the tires.
Bottom of the tires.
At least the
that's
bottom
my final answer.
Bumper, you couldn't stop. If he stopped, you couldn't even see the brake lights.
If you can't see the bottom of the tires, you are tailgating.
Right.
So do not tailgate.
Professor, for the record, I feel like the two other contestants are ganging up on me.
I do want Aaron and Steve to know that if you actually kill Eddie, you do get to split his points.
Nice.
Let's note that for later.
How
I kind
many
of enjoy
does Eddie
his,
have right
his
now?
Snorting.
I'll check my grades at the end of this round.
Okay.
That was me. 15 points, worth it. Let's do it.
My catchphrase is my snort. It's copyrighted in 3 states.
In the 90s, when I was a driving instructor, the answer used to be the two-second rule. as Eddie said.
Who's
however,
your daddy? Who's your daddy?
Not Eddie, because the answer in 2011 is the 3-second rule.
Oh.
Are we talking about the professor's love life?
So it means like.
No, I always maintain a safe distance from that.
So when an item, the car in front of you passes an item, wait 3 seconds, and you pass it, that's the safe
distance. That's the safe stopping distance. Yeah. Yes.
3 seconds.
3 seconds rule.
Interesting.
I'm going to ask you one more driving question. What do you do if you hit a deer?
Call my insurance agent and be really, really ticked off.
Well, that's probably a requirement of your insurance, but it's not a requirement of Ohio law.
Check to see if it's dead.
Stop your vehicle and check for damage.
On you or the deer? Eddie.
The car.
Eddie, you've raised your hand. What do you got for us?
Screw the deer.
I would make sure my headlights were on, and I would immediately give mouth-to-mouth to the deer at once.
Maintain a 3-second rule with the headlights on.
Well,
is it a sexy deer?
Is it a doe or a buck? That's what I need to know.
First of all, Eddie, if you knew about veterinary science as I do, you would know that you do chest compressions on animals, but you do not do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on animals. So if you want to save an injured deer, you should do chest compressions.
Really? But isn't, yes. there's like dog CPR where you like blow in their nose, I thought.
They used to do that.
They don't do it anymore?
They do not recommend it anymore.
You're actually not supposed to do CPR. Supposed to blow into humans anymore either.
Just chest compression.
Just chest.
Really?
That's all you're supposed to do.
It takes away too much time from maintaining a steady rhythm of the heart thing. Yep.
For explaining that for the class, Steve gets an extra 10 points.
Wow.
And a visual for the class is Steve Sabo is dressed as a physician for Halloween, he's an expert on medical advice, so I wanted to say that.
But I'm sorry that all students are going to lose 25 points for missing the opportunity to say, drink a beer. Hit a deer, drink a beer.
Hit a deer, drink a beer. That's a little
Although
phrase.
That is not the
is
correct
that in
answer.
The guy?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's just an old joke, so I assume
that can't be correct.
that cop shows sound up. Right.
All right, there are two options depending on a decision that the driver has to make, and that decision is: do you want to take the deer home?
Really?
Yes.
Ah. Because, how would you want to take the deer home?
Because having killed it.
If it's an attractive deer.
Yes.
Right. But you can't.
Maybe you want to start a relationship.
If you're not in season, you're not supposed to do that, right?
Well, it was an accident.
Well, but if you want to take it home, you have to contact a game warden.
Really?
Or any officer of the law.
Any officer of the law.
Yes. And then you report that you've killed a deer and you're taking it home, as any hunter would do.
But if you don't want to take it home?
You drive home. You don't have to do anything.
Really?
Correct.
That's just it.
Does that count against your 2-deer limit for hunting season,
yes.
Professor?
If
yes,
you take
does.
It home, it probably does.
Yes, it does.
So is that, just for future reference, is it the same, like, for a person?
Depends on...
Well,
yes, if you kill
you
the person...
gut it right on the spot, because if you don't, then the meat gets gamey and you can't eat it.
Yeah, you don't want that.
So.
Well, that brings us to the end of our first round.
That's an awkward
There's, right? The mother of all segues.
So,
As I look at your grades, I'm reminded of what Alexander Pope once said, which is, to err is human. And based on your grades, you are all superhumans.
Oh.
All right.
And forgive divine.
Yes, but your teacher doesn't forgive you for your grades or your answers. However, as a form of forgiveness, I will give you another chance to improve your grades with a question about human biology and anatomy. Bear in mind, as I ask you this next question, it does not relate to deer in any way, Eddie. You have that in mind? You ready?
I'm good on human anatomy.
How many calories does kissing burn?
Oh.
Tongue or no tongue?
That is there are too many variables. How long a kiss is it? How active of a kiss
I've
is
read
it?
This.
Are we talking about
it's like 150 an hour or something, right?
Are we talking dollars, and where are you kissing people?
No, something.
There is a general average statistic.
It's not high. It might be only as low as 25.
I will say, Steve, that your first answer is very close.
Oh, wow.
But I have it in minutes. Most people don't kiss for hours at a time.
Well, I can't speak for other people.
Fair enough.
Mouth-to-mouth kissing, right?
This is human-to-human lip, face-lip-to-face-lip kissing.
So what would it be? 60 times...
You want the answer English or metric?
There are metric calories, but we're talking...
25 calories a minute.
We have an answer of 25 calories a minute. Aaron or Eddie?
I'm going to say 10 calories a minute.
10 calories a minute?
I saw a reaction in the professor's face when you said 150, so I'm going to go on the higher end and be between 100 and 125.
Per minute?
Yes, depending on how much
that
passion.
Are you nuts? There's no way. It can't be.
That would be the only thing you had to do to work out.
You guys must not be doing it.
Which would be fantastic.
That would be great.
But I don't think that's
how. I had a big dinner. Let's go make out for an hour.
The correct answer of this statistical average that you can find, often repeated or quoted, is 2 to 3 calories a minute.
Oh, 2 to 3. Yeah, I should.
Well,
yeah,
so if you say 3 calories a minute, that's 180 an hour. So when you said 150, that's a very good estimate.
That's pretty good.
So that's worth a gold star for Steve.
All right, I'll take it.
Teacher's pet.
But do you take any credit away for him not being able to then do the math to go back to a minute after that?
Well, I was doing math differently in my head.
Yeah,
exactly. Aaron, in all actuality, your answer was actually closest. You got no validation whatsoever from the professor for having the best answer.
Well, how about this, Mr. Some people do kiss for hours.
Right.
What is the Guinness Book of World Records record long kiss? You have any idea? I'm going to let you off the hook. You will not know these people's names. They're from Thailand. And no American could pronounce these names.
100 hours.
That's probably not bad. That's probably, I'd back that up. That sounds about right.
We had agreement on 100. What do you think, Aaron?
I mean, that's, you would have to stay up for almost 4 days then. That seems like a long time.
Well, they do those dance marathons. And they, like, you take breaks every, you get like a 5 minute break every hour or something like that.
I'm sure that is part of it, but.
Oh, you do get breaks and things?
Yeah.
Oh.
What do you think, Aaron?
I'm gonna go 50 hours. Let's split the difference.
Point goes to Aaron.
Oh.
The record is actually 58 hours, 35 minutes, and 58 seconds. A couple in Thailand did it. It actually was organized and is listed in Ripley's Believe It or Not, and occurred over Valentine's Day. This in the year 2013.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
See, that's something that can be beat. Like, there's a Guinness record for unsnapping bras, and I want to practice that.
I want to
be in
that.
The Guinness Book of World Records as the world's fastest bra
unsnapper. Can you imagine kissing someone for 2 days? I mean, after like 30 minutes, it'd just be disgusting.
Well, it depends on the person, maybe. Do I get to pick the person?
I don't know, man. You pick the most attractive person you can pick. You still don't want to kiss them for 2 days.
The good news, just gets sloppy after a while. The good news is, if I add everyone's grade together, you have a C.
Hey.
Oh.
That's average.
That's only true after you add it together, though. The average would be 25 each.
So add it together, not divide, but add it.
Yes.
And, wow, that's not good.
No, it's not. I'm going to turn to popular culture, which will give you guys a chance to really show what you know.
All right. Jeez.
And there is a correct answer to this question.
Unlike all the other ones.
Are zombie movies science fiction?
No.
Aaron says no. Can you justify that answer?
Well, it depends on the zombie movie, I think.
Depends on the
zombie movie. Certain zombie movies are more just, you know, sort of more traditional monster movies or whatever. But then you've got things like 28 Days Later where it's the virus that, you know, and that's possibly science fiction.
Well,
I think it depends on how people are getting zombified.
Okay.
But if you look at something like, there's a movie, it was based on a book, but it's called The Serpent and the
Rainbow.
And the Rainbow, yes. And that's based on real actual science, which is actually this fish thing that has secretes something that they ground up, which actually creates a zombie type thing. So there really is a zombie effect that is real. So it has to be real.
The Serpent and the Rainbow, I think, was actually based on a true story.
Yeah,
so that's not even science fiction.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it's science fiction.
Right.
If the question is it science fiction? I would say most of them are, but some are not.
Yeah.
I say the question is entirely too broad to answer. What is science fiction? Let's define the definition or the parameter, and which movies are we
even
considering?
That's a tough question.
Can I just say that I'm kind of irritated about the fast zombies. I don't like fast
the
zombies.
The rage zombies or something.
Yeah.
It's called.
Yeah, yeah. That was never how it was. Right. And I think just making a change like that to zombie culture, I don't approve. I don't like it.
If we use film genre as a basis for interpreting the question, pre-1968, zombies in films were some version of the voodoo,
right.
Haitian, kind of like Serpent in the Rainbow. Mm-hmm. There could be explanations that have, whether it's fish paste or herbal.
Right.
Night of the Walking Dead.
Well, there's the old classic movie from the 20s called White Zombie. There's a movie from the 70s called Sugar Hill, which is a great film.
Can you just post
film.
About that?
What?
Can you just post about that?
Yes, Sugar but... Hill? Correct.
Yeah.
How about Rob Zombie?
Rob Zombie took his name from those old zombie movies. That's why he called himself
See,
that.
I read The Serpent in the Rainbow. What's interesting about... It's actually fascinating, but like a lot of times that they can be... They have all the... You can't tell by science that they're still alive, but they can feel and they can see and they can hear,
right.
But they can get brain damage if they're not revived in enough time. So they actually do might be alive later, walking around with brain damage like in real zombies. Yeah. So that's really where it came.
So it's
from.
Kind of a in some ways a Haitian or voodoo curse.
Yeah,
and depending on sort of the voodoo religion. Is interpreted as bringing someone back from the dead to make them into a slave or a killer. And then that journalistic, the book was more journalistic. The movie was a little more sort of, Hollywood version of the book.
Right.
Professor, I would like to revise my answer.
Yes.
Pre-1969, zombies were real. Post, they were completely made up.
Well, in 1968...
And
George
that does not
a,
answer the question.
George A. Romero changed everything.
Night of the Living Dead.
With Night of the Living Dead. And by changing everything, he not only changed what zombies were in movies, but he changed what horror movies were. He changed what independent movies were.
And Professor, for the record, which contestant first mentioned Night of the Living Dead, please?
I believe Aaron's description of whether or not it's a pandemic zombie or a raised from the dead zombie actually hits the problem on the head. Yes. You did mention the year 1969. Sadly, Night of the Living Dead came out in 1968, and I had already said everything changed in 1968.
Our professor is supposed to increase the self-esteem of their students.
I raise my students up by beating them down.
So it's tough love, right?
Well, it is tough. I don't know how much love there is involved. Of course, I will say Eddie did raise a legitimate question, which is, another take on it is, what does the phrase science fiction mean?
Right.
Yeah. So in the realm of zombies, usually science fiction fans want science fiction to have an element of science in it, even if it's speculative or exaggerated for narrative effect. They at least want there to be like 1 foot of the story in real science ideas.
Which is why the more modern zombie stories are science fiction and the other ones would be more
fantasy. So sometimes people refer to the pandemic type zombies, as in 28 Days Later, as being more like science fiction, but hardcore zombie fans don't call those zombies. Because there's a feeling that zombies should be raised from the dead.
Should be undead, not.
And there's really no scientific way to talk about the fantasy idea of actually reanimating corpses in the manner that zombies are.
So what's
would you consider Frankenstein a zombie?
Frankenstein.
Is Frankenstein?
Mary Shelley.
You're looking at your page.
That's on the notes.
Okay.
You cannot stump the professor.
We'll skip it.
You cannot stump the professor.
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which came out in 1818, by the way.
The movie or the book?
The original book.
I'm just kidding.
I think someone is slightly grandstanding.
It was actually written on a weekend, right? With a bunch of writers got together and they had a little contest or something?
Well, Mary Shelley was known for writing gothic horror fiction already. Mm. And it was kind of a group of friends would get together and do these writing weekends. Remember, there was no television, no movie, no radio.
Right.
So this was an actual form of entertainment. The people would get together and tell each other stories. And so supposedly the idea for the Frankenstein story came from those kinds of sessions. Mm-hmm. That book is often pointed at as the first modern science fiction novel. Mm. And then the famous James Whale movie of 1931 is an
very specific, yeah.
Is an early science fiction movie, but it's not the first science fiction movie. Aaron, I bet you know the name of the first science fiction movie.
No, I don't.
Anyone?
War of the Worlds.
No.
That was a radio thing. Plan 9 from Outer Space.
A classic.
That was actually the first thing that popped in my head, and I didn't think that was
a classic
it.
Zombie movie.
Yeah.
From the day Ed Wood reanimated.
Plan 9 was the first?
No.
Okay, I that's what popped in my head, and I knew that couldn't be right.
I apologize. I was so excited that Steve Sable mentioned Plan 9 from Outer Space. In fact, that's worth at least 9 extra points.
Oh, which is also on your notes, right? Superman.
In 1902, there was a French movie called in English, The Voyage to the Moon.
That's
where they shoot a big bullet out of a giant cannon.
And the moon has a face.
The moon has a face, gets hit in the eye.
Yeah.
And then they have a picnic on the moon. I will say a little known thing about Frankenstein is the first Frankenstein movie was made in 1910. And by Edison Laboratories. It was one of the first movies they made.
Oh, wow. And the whole scope thing, the...
The celluloid form of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Edison Labs get the credit for that invention. Mm-hmm. The predecessors came from Europe and France, and there were other types of rotoscoping machines.
Right,
celluloid film,
okay.
I believe Edison gets the credit for that.
And not many people realize this, but it actually starred Ronald Reagan and Betty White.
Wow.
I just thought it was interesting that with Frankenstein is that Frankenstein is actually the name of the doctor, not the creature.
Yeah.
The creature is Frankenstein's monster, but everybody thinks Frankenstein is that creature, but it's not.
And if you read the book, there's a lot more about Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah. I'm not brown nosing. I'm just
It's a lot more of kind of a moral quandary, kind of exploration of his own,
by the
sort
standards,
of feelings towards
by the standards
doing.
Of 2013, no one's going to consider that book very scientific either.
Right.
No.
Actually, what she does in the book to reanimate the corpse is probably more like chemistry and alchemy. There's the film that introduced electricity and lightning as a way to reanimate.
I didn't actually read the book, so there's no.
It's like a 2-page description of how he reanimates his corpse. And there might be, the word electricity might be used in there, but it's primarily chemistry and alchemy that is used.
I think the original, it almost seemed like more of a cautionary tale of messing with nature, you know?
Well, one of the things it does is it introduces the idea of the mad scientist.
Right.
Yeah.
The mad scientist, which is, there were characters about movies and, well, not movies, there were stories and plays and poems about sort of crazy megalomaniacs and knowledge. But in terms of the scientific revolution in the more modern era, then Dr. Frankenstein becomes the template for mad scientists. And then the 1931 film, that performance, which is really over the top, becomes the film template of how to be a mad scientist in a movie or in a 20th
century. This is a huge tangent. Right. But outside of the defense industry, most scientists, I think, are benevolent and help people. So I wonder where the archetype mad scientist comes from, because in real life, it doesn't seem very realistic to me.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, I don't. I think scientists do all kinds of weird stuff. They grow ears on rats for no reason, just to see that they can. I mean, I think they...
It's not for no reason.
Well, what I'm saying, Dr. Frankenstein is a mad scientist in theory, but if that would have worked out well, he would have been a genius, and that's the same thing as the technological that's growing an ear on a rat.
If you were earless, Steve, would you want a rat ear, or would you just want to be earless?
Well, it's a human ear, but it's grown off a rat's back.
Well, I think what Steve is expressing, which explains the mad scientist archetype, is that people on the street who don't interact with science in our daily lives, we don't have a direct relationship, so we don't really know what's going on. So even if there are morally or scientifically justifiable reason for things that seem odd, like growing ears or cloning or just things like that, there creates a kind of just suspicion/worry.
Well, that's part of the problem, I think, in science is that in order to comment even on the ethical issues, sometimes you have to have such advanced scientific training to even understand how to raise the questions, you know? Yes. That's why, actually, I was just telling my students, I said, Case Western, they've got a joint PhD program in bioethics and genetics.
Sure.
So that they have ethicist scientists that know what the hell, you know, is going on with the science so that they can sort of question it, you know? Because otherwise, I guess it's sort of, you know, the potential for everyone to just become a mad scientist is science with no boundaries because no one understands what's going on.
Aaron, are you saying you can get a PhD in joints at Case Western?
I was seriously looking into that. Unfortunately, philosophy is the closest you're going to get. So that's what I went for.
Well, my students, we've come to the part of the class where I have to put my nose into the grade book and calculate your final grades to determine who is going to receive the class prize of the Golden Banana. And I'm going to give you each one more chance to improve your grade with any sort of extra credit commentary that you think will help the situation out. Eddie, what would you like to say on your own behalf?
I would like to say thank you for this opportunity to be on the podcast. And I was wondering why we did not use the 2013 version of the Ohio Code. Your book might be completely obsolete by now. That's
a good point.
Well, I would like all of my students to know that you have to be a responsible learner who knows how to do your own research. So I'm teaching you the skills for you to be able to go to the world and be an adult thinker.
Then how come you did not give us...
You can tell that Jerry's been a professor for a while because that is exactly what I say when I don't know something.
Then, Professor, how come you did not give us the topics in advance so we could also research them?
The sound that the audience at home can hear is like the coyote falling off a cliff. Is Eddie's grade just plummeting to its death? In a moment, you'll hear the poof sound of the body.
Usually, you can't lose points with extra credit, but in this case, we're going to make an exception.
Absolutely. And Aaron, you yourself are on borderline right now with your last comment. So.
Hey.
Anything you can...
I was developing a camaraderie between us in our lack of knowledge.
Between you and Eddie, because he has a great lack of knowledge can have a camaraderie with.
I don't know.
Aaron, any last comments on your own?
Yes. Science fiction. All right, so here's something interesting. Alien abductions.
Okay.
Right? So if you follow what people report during alien abductions, it always follows how aliens are represented in science fiction. So if you know, we've got the big heads, big bug eyes, green skin, the whole thing, because, you know, since Close Encounters and movies like that, right? And we've kind of had that picture. Back in the, you know, I think 40s and 50s and things, they would present them as like these big astronauts, like 8-foot tall things in astronaut suits, and people would report being abducted by those. Which, takes a little... Well, unless the science fiction is emulating life.
Right.
It sort of,
I'll see your comment, which is a well-documented popular culture thesis.
Yeah.
So you can find publications that show the correlation between that thing that you described. And I'll take you back even further.
Okay.
If you go back before the age of space exploration, when people there were no accounts of alien abductions.
Mm.
But there were a lot of accounts of people being visited by saints. And since the advent of space exploration and Martians and Venusians and aliens, there's a big drop in people reporting being visited by saints and a sudden burgeoning where there wasn't 150 years ago any of people suddenly being abducted by aliens.
What about ghosts? Back in the day, was there also a lot of... Is ghosts gone up or down with aliens?
I haven't seen any statistics on that.
Huh.
But the thing is with saint visitations and alien abductions is it's usually linked to sleep time hallucinations.
Now, follow-up question. In the case of saints, what was the reporting of anal probes compared to...
I was thinking the exact same thing. Saints probably less anal probes.
But, not necessarily. We're talking about people affiliated with Catholicism.
I think Catholic priests are involved. It's a big Catholic priest conspiracy.
Why does anal probes come into this?
However, again, this is what drives Eddie crazy because I have one for you that goes back.
Okay.
During
speaking of anal probes,
but speaking of the saintly visits,
you're going to anally probe Aaron.
over, like, let's just loosely say, and historians don't like this, the Middle Ages, there were hundreds of reported cases of immaculate conceptions. So people...
Hundreds.
Now, this would be like one in this village and one in this village.
Right,
but
right,
over
right.
decades and centuries, there were hundreds of these reported cases. And this is related to that because people thought they were being visited by God or saints or spirits. And then later they would be pregnant and they would think that their hallucination, as opposed to, say, their uncle or something...
Oh, I can blame this on this saint that came to visit me.
Maybe it's just because culture looked down on whores. I don't know where it came from!
Yeah, they were all promiscuous cheerleaders.
Mr. Sabo, do you have anything to say on your behalf in an effort to improve your grade?
I do. I don't know if it's going to improve my grade or not. I will say that, first off, I have no idea what that UFO thing was. But I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Did we answer these science fiction questions? Is it yes, it is science fiction, or is it not science fiction?
That's what I was thinking.
Proper zombie movies about reanimated corpses that eat people are fantasy, not science fiction.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
The pandemic ones
are sometimes considered science fiction. Sometimes soft science.
Right.
Yeah. Gotcha. I'll say that once again, I enjoyed my time here.
And, thank you for joining in.
I found these questions. I'm not kissing ass. I'm saying I find it interesting. I like stuff. It's somewhat Halloween themed, so I give you credit for that. And that's it. That's all I'm saying.
I would like to advise Eddie to pay attention to Steve on the proper tone and timbre and attitude of brown nosing. He hits it just right. He hits it just right.
Delicious. I want the golden banana.
Once you've had the golden banana once, you need to have it again.
Only during a nightly visit from a saint or a UFO.
Well, speaking of anal probes, who won the golden banana, professor?
For bringing up the question of whether or not hallucinated saints anally probe their victims, Professor Aaron Pearl wins today's golden banana.
Woohoo!
And I can only hope that there's some way to reanimate the corpse of Eddie's grave. Until then, it remains a fantasy. And that just leaves it for me, your host and professor, Dr. Jerry Jaffe, to thank you, Aaron, and you, Steve, and you, Eddie, for joining in on today's Gold Star Classroom. Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Good night, everybody. Yay. All right. Good evening.
Thank you very much for doing that.
Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.